The Guardian.
Football Weekly Extra.
Football Weekly Extra. Covering today, a sport again in shock after the violent scenes in Port Said, Egypt. We'll be getting a report on the situation there, along with our roundup of a busy midweek of action in the Premier League, where there was defeat for Man City at Everton, and abroad. There's Africa Cup of Nations, the quarterfinal lineup, Italy, snow and goals in equal measures, and a big preview of this weekend's Premier League action. Chelsea, Man United, Liverpool, Tottenham and more in Football Weekly Extra. Thanks for joining us, everybody. On board today, we have Amy Lawrence.
Hello.
Hi, Amy. Jacob Steinberg.
Hello.
And John Ashdown.
Hi.
Hi, John. Hello, everybody. Now, also, we're joined on the line by Abdulrahman Hussain, who's on his way to Port Said at the moment, to get an update and a bit of clarification on the terrible scenes Wednesday night in Egypt. Abdul, thanks very much for joining us. Listen, first of all, you're on your way to Port Said, where there's what, a massive inquiry, big police operation going on at the moment. What's the story there?
The story is one of growth and competence by security personnel at the stadium last night. Fans were allowed to storm the pitch and run towards the stands where the supporters of Al Ahly, the rival team, were. And there are reports coming out now that as the Ahly fans tried to flee the stands, the exits were closed. And so a lot of people died in the crush between the two.
Because that's one of the things that's really unclear from the footage we've seen over here. There's been talk of a really high number of victims, 73 or more, and maybe thousands injured. But it hasn't been clear from the footage whereabouts this happened. So it was a crush getting out of the stadium rather than, say, attacks between the fans, was it?
Yeah, I think that would be the major reason, because there's these at the top of the stands there are these narrow kind of hallways from which you exit the stadium, and apparently they were closed off by the military on the other side, and so all the fans who were trying to flee the stands were kind of stuck there, and so that was probably where most of the casualties occurred.
Now, you mentioned that the idea of incompetence by the security forces. There's also been a lot of suggestions that there was something premeditated, almost as though they were trying to create the conditions for some trouble to happen.
There is a lot of people I believe that a lot of fans are very angry about how the incidents. So, I mean, there was trouble before the game. There was trouble at halftime. Fans stormed the pitch at halftime. The match wasn't cancelled. The security presence outside the stadium was not as it usually is. Usually, this game, this is a long-standing rivalry, and usually this game is always things tend to kick off. On a much more minor scale, obviously, but this time there seems to have been a kind of a lapse in the security, and people really do believe that it might have been premeditated. But there's no proof of that as of now. But we can definitely say that there was gross incompetence.
Mm.
Everyone seems to know someone who died last night. It's an incredible tragedy, and what's even sadder is that this brings to mind the Hillsborough incident in '89 in England, and how it caused a major change in stadia in England across the board. And the sad thing is that there's no such feeling that something similar might happen here. It seems to be that this will be an incident that will kind of come to pass, and it won't result in any major change in how people attend football games in this country.
Mm. Well, it's obviously coming in the middle of a really difficult period for the country. Listen, best of luck in Port Said, and we can follow your updates on the Guardian website. Is that right?
Yes, you can.
Excellent. Abdul, best of luck, as I say, and thanks very much for joining us today.
Thanks a lot.
Well, horrible scenes there in Egypt on Wednesday night, and no doubt more information will be with you by the time this podcast airs. Now, in the meantime, on with the football and the Premier League in action Tuesday and Wednesday night. The big story, that win for Everton without Jagielka, without Sylvain Distin, and with rubbish forwards, they still beat the league leaders 1-0. Darren Gibson, his best game ever for Man United, that one, I think.
Yeah, they were singing his name at Old Trafford when he scored, which is probably the first time that's ever happened. I think you've got to raise legitimate questions about Mancini now. Not whether he should go, but you know, quite how good a manager he is. Because I think at Inter, he won the leagues basically by default. He got nothing. He did nothing in Europe, and he was sacked because of that. As soon as he left, they won the Champions League two seasons later. You look at it this season, he's got unlimited funds, probably the weakest league there's been for years. Chelsea are no good. Arsenal are no good. We're talking about the worst Manchester United side, although that's relatively speaking, that probably Ferguson's had in the Premier League. And they're out of all three cup competitions. They've done nothing in Europe, and they haven't... They're not running away with the league. For example, like Chelsea did under Mourinho in his first season. Mm. I was talking to Rob Smythe before the Everton game on Wednesday or Tuesday, and we both said, "Yeah, this is a really difficult game, sort of a benchmark for whether Manchester City are actually going to run away with it." He brought up the game against in 2005 when Chelsea went to Blackburn the day after United won 4-2 at Arsenal. The Keane, Vieira, Ronaldo scoring twice. And Chelsea went, they won. This was Blackburn, they're probably their filthiest under Mark Hughes. Petr Cech saved a penalty. Robin's ankle was broken. Chelsea went 9 points clear. City go to Everton, another tough game, tough away, northern ground to go to. They lose 1-0, barely have a chance, don't score a goal against a side with Heitinger and Hibbert at the back.
Well, Mancini said it was all his fault for not preparing the team properly for the game. But what about the referee? I mean, so many managers in his position would have said, we could have had three penalties in that match.
Yeah, to his credit, he's someone who hasn't really, apart from, maybe the card waving, which is something that I don't really get too excited about. He doesn't really tend to talk about referees, I guess.
Mm. But they could have had.
They could have had a penalty.
Well, at least. Yeah. Yeah.
And Drenthe was probably lucky not to be sent off as well. Right. I can't remember who it was. I think it was on Company. But if only they do have quite a big advantage over every other team that they're not utilising at the moment, and they're very poor away from home. Since the Manchester United game, they've won twice, and that was against QPR and Wigan. Hmm. Barely scored a goal as well.
Well, those January figures do make interesting reading. 8 games, 4 losses, 3 wins, and 2 goodbyes to cup competitions.
Mm. Yeah, but the upshot, if you want to try and look at it on the other way, is that they are going through a really rubbish time, and they are still top of the league. You would not really expect, on the whole, no club goes through an entire season without some kind of a poor period. And if they can somehow pull themselves out of this one, and they have got every opportunity with players coming back, obviously, and with extra rest through not having cup competitions, there is no reason why, if they pull themselves together and focus on the job, they shouldn't go on another positive run like they had at the start of the season.
They have Fulham next, Everton?
They've actually got quite a gentle next run of league fixtures. Mm-hmm. They've got Fulham, Blackburn and Bolton at home and Villa away in their next 4 league games, right. Which, it gives them a nice opportunity in the same way that when they started the season they were able to get off to such a flyer because they had a really kind opening fixture list, which I think was massively important to them with a new team and a lot of new players to integrate. They were able to gel because they didn't really have any major challenges till more or less, I think it was about October when they first played one of the so-called top 4 teams. So they've got a good opportunity, if you don't want to look at the negative side of it, to say they can pull themselves together now.
Well, all right.
I think they'll still probably win the league, but I think that's the bare minimum for what's being spent. And they should. I think it's like Brian Clough, I'll win it better. And to be still not able to pull away from Manchester United, given all the problems they've had, it's not particularly impressive. This is a team that can go out and spend money on who they want. And to be losing to Everton and Sunderland, not able to beat West Brom, it's not great.
Mm. Everton, meantime, move up to 10th place, and they've been busy on the transfer window. I was being a bit rude saying rubbish forwards, and that Strakalursi had a lion-hearted performance there on Tuesday. And then I brought in this fellow, Jelovic. Huge numbers of goals for Rangers, of course, which always bodes well, You can score in Scotland, I always say. And Stephen Pienaar returning. He could be useful too, eh? Nice.
Well, bringing in Stephen Pienaar, that's a huge upgrade from Bilyan Letitdinov, who was doing very little for them out wide in midfield and was barely playing. So he's certainly an upgrade. Jelovic, as you say, Anthony Stokes scores goals in Scotland. Samaras doesn't score goals. Doesn't score goals anywhere. But the third highest scorer in the SPL is Francesco Sandaza, who was not getting the Brighton team very often last year in League One. So it's a huge leap up in standards for Jelovic, and £6 million is an awful lot of money.
Fair enough. Now, meantime, Man United beating Stoke to go level, but behind on goal difference with City, and a huge game coming up for Man United this Sunday when they're going to be facing Chelsea, who just about drew in their match away to Swansea. 93rd minute, the goal. So in a sense, it was a 0.1, but it does rather read like 2 points dropped by André Villas-Boas' side in a game that was the derby of the Mourinho proteges, of course. André Villas-Boas was a former employee at Chelsea under Jose, as was Brendan Rodgers.
Absolutely, yeah. And Swansea deserved to win it, really. They were very unlucky to concede like with that big deflected goal. Chelsea United are both really grinding it out at the minute. United grinding it out, but they've still managed to win 8 of the last 10 league games, I think, which is why they've dragged themselves level on points with City. So the weekend's game is going to be interesting just to see which one can wrench themselves out of this slumber and actually turn it on a bit.
Mm. Wow.
Will it be either?
Because, of course, it was at Old Trafford last time, and there was the Torres and the miss but the and all that. And he's, what's it now, 18 goals in all competitions? 18 games?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Like 1,000 minutes or you know, along those lines.
Wow.
Well, it's Chelsea strikers as a whole, actually. I mean, I was looking, I'm sure I wrote it down, but I've lost it now. But I think the last goal Chelsea striker scored from open play in the league was November the 22nd.
Really?
When Daniel Sturridge scored at the equaliser at Tottenham.
All right.
And since then, you know, it doesn't really matter where the goals come from, but that suggests that things aren't quite running to plan.
All right, a couple of questions here as well. One, who will be playing left back for Chelsea? Because the red card for Ashley Cole means that for the first time in 65 games, as Zonal Markin was pointing out, they will be without his services there at left back.
He's probably quite pleased about that because I don't think I've ever seen a player give a bigger, worse time to Ashley Cole than Valencia last season. He went outside, inside, beaten for pace, strength. So I'm not saying he did it on purpose to get sent off. As for who'll play left back, I think maybe Ryan Bertrand would be the...
That's what they're saying.
Yeah.
Mm. Another question, who'll be in goal for the Red Devils? Interesting to see midweek. Lindegaard had turned his ankle and De Gea was ill, so ill in fact, that he was able to sit in Old Trafford on one of the coldest nights of the year and watch the game.
He can't appear. He must have been certain that he wasn't contagious in any way.
Right.
Stoke flu.
So, and this fellow Amos came in and was largely untroubled by Ben Amos, no?
Yeah, but yeah. Stoke didn't really test him particularly. You'd imagine if De Gea can shake off, knock down a couple of Lemsips.
Yep.
Packet Hall soothers.
Yep.
He'll be in there.
All right. Excellent. Okay, well, you need someone good in goal against Chelsea. That's the message we're receiving from the numbers and that. What about John Terry, meantime? He wasn't in the team because he was injured this week. And any thought that he might be suspended for the rest of the season or he might be missing because of his court troubles has been rather knocked on the head by the fact that he turned up this week, pleaded not guilty, and then the trial has actually been put back, you all know this, till July, because, it says his solicitor, not all witnesses would be available for a five-day trial until then. Which raises all sorts of questions about not just Chelsea, but also England, because various players coming out and saying it would be toxic in the England dressing room if John Terry goes to the Euros. It's a difficult one, this. I mean, he's innocent until proven guilty.
Yeah. Well, what will be very interesting on Sundays if Rio Ferdinand plays, whether they'll have the handshake, because...
Oh, not again.
Well, yeah, but they, more so than with Anton Ferdinand, they could be potentially England's centre-backs in at Euro 2012.
The rest of Europe hopes so.
Yeah, but if he doesn't, then you have the question of whether you can realistically play Terry, whether Capello can play Terry.
I find this whole notion of suspending the trial till after the Euros very bizarre. I mean, I can see, I don't know enough about the way that the legal justice system works, but footballers do have a lot of spare time. I mean, they often go into training for a couple of hours a day, and I just find it strange that even, you know, they couldn't perhaps come up with some idea where the relevant witnesses who needed to come in could come in. You know, they could schedule the trial to run for, you know, afternoons, for example, when, you know, for a certain amount of time to get...
Are you suggesting they thought that they'd get this out of the way after the Euros so that Terry could play and all that, and it's a little bit rebounded?
Well, it does seem quite strange. I can't think of many other occupations where this sort of thing would probably be allowed.
Considering most of the witnesses are going to be QPR and Chelsea players, you'd imagine there might be certain times when those collective groups aren't exactly busy at the same time. You know, it feels like there should be a workaround somewhere, but...
Mm.
I think it's fairly disastrous for England for this thing to hang on till after the Euros. And I can see from Chelsea's perspective probably why they wanted it. And even from English England's perspective, where they thought, oh, this will be a good thing. Let's see if we can get it pushed back. But in reality, I think it's completely counterproductive. Much better to get it. I mean, the fact it's even taken this long from an incident that took place right at the beginning of the season is pretty much of a pity as well.
It is indeed. And appeals and calls for him to step down as captain and not be part of Capello's squad.
It's just going to go on and on. It's going to be hanging completely over everything that Capello, every decision he makes, every squad announcement he has to make, every get-together. It's going to be a focus point. And it's not beneficial to anybody.
The problem is that if he's not going to step down, and he said he's not guilty. So to step down for him would be an admission of guilt. It could be seen like that. And you can't. Can you punish him if he hasn't been tried yet?
Of course not. Which is why a speedy resolution is the only way to try and get something practical done here, and to actually be trying to seek to get a lengthy resolution, which is what his lawyers have asked for, is not doing John Terry or anybody else any favours.
All right. Well, on that note, we'll conclude part one, but loads more stories to come from the midweek round, including Spurs. They're on a charge, a bit like their manager. Right, part two, let's look at North London football teams in order of Premier League standing. So it's Spurs, Amy. Are they back in the title picture, eh? They're 5 points behind.
Well, I mean, the thing for Tottenham is that their upcoming fixtures, I think for some time, have always been there with flashing lights, as this is the moment that's going to define how, you know, what they can realistically go for this season.
Who've they got?
They've got Liverpool, Newcastle, Arsenal and Man United in the Premier League.
So Liverpool and Man United, those are tough games there. Newcastle's not easy either.
And they also... Thanks, James. Can you let me finish my point? They also have no Europe, which compared with... although City and United have Europa League rather than the Champions League, it's still an extra couple of games and travelling and so on and so forth. So this is the moment, though, if they can possibly come through that run of fixtures still flying, then... everybody's going to be saying, watch Spurs, because they've got quite a kind run in.
Have they? The final bit?
Once they've got that out of the way, I think they only play Chelsea left of the biggish teams, and the rest of them are lesser teams.
All right.
It will be, you know, theirs to go full pelt at.
They look terrific against Wigan. Gareth Bale, once again, amazing. These hamstrings are extraordinary. How he manages to elevate his legs. Is it hamstrings?
For what?
But he gets his leg way up.
All right. What, for the first goal?
Yeah. You remember that he did one of these last season as well. It's just extraordinary how he can hook a ball from that high up. Oh, amazing. And of course, Modric was great. And they did a little bit of transfer dealing, buying Louis Saha. People tweeting Harry preparing his insanity defence because Saha hasn't scored in 1,039 minutes of Premier League football. Doesn't get a run in the team, say Everton fans, but then he's not going to do that at Spurs either. But they're going to be at Anfield on Monday. Now, Liverpool, losing at Bolton seems to have done them the world of good, no? Since then, they've knocked Man United and Man City out of the league and FA Cup, and then they had that big win at Wolves.
Do they have Suarez back?
Not yet, no.
But for the United game, in the following one. Right.
Exactly.
And Big Andy did a goal as well.
he did indeed do a goal. Yeah. Andy Carroll.
Yeah.
And Craig Bellamy, he keeps playing football matches as well.
It's a fantastic signing. I didn't really think he'd be this good. Still got it.
Yeah.
They benefited from some shoddy Wolves defending in that second half as well. Wolves just seemed to stop playing. And the Wolves chairman went in the Wolves dressing room after the match to tear a strip off his players, which is something that's quite nice and sort of retro about a chairman going into a dressing room. I hope he was wearing a massive coat and had a cigar and things. That would have been the full picture.
He wasn't very happy, Steve Morgan. There were all sorts of banners out at Molyneux saying Mac out and that kind of thing.
The thing is, who are they going to get? When you're in this situation, it's as much as you're deciding you don't want what you've got, you've got to really think about whether what's coming is going to be better. And they find themselves probably in the, if they do get rid of Mick McCarthy, in a similar sort of situation to, I don't know, Leeds are in, albeit in different division at the moment, where you're looking at someone to probably come in and do a specialist job for you for the second half of the season, which is why people keep talking about Neil Warnock.
Right, well, Blackburn currently third last, then Wolves, then Wigan. Blackburn and Wolves are both 2 points off safety, 17th place currently held by Bolton. Blackburn, of course, got beaten by Newcastle. A Newcastle team have raced back up to fifth place, and this without Demba Baré. Wouldn't it be crazy if they ended up getting that fourth spot?
It's something new, isn't it?
It is something new.
They've done it on the cheap as well.
All right. So. How about that amazing Opta stat that's been doing the rounds about if the Premier League table had started when Martin O'Neill took over at Sunderland, who would be top of the table, John?
Sunderland.
It's true. They would be. They're at Stoke on Saturday. Fraser Campbell, 17 months out, and look at him.
2-2.
Two and two.
Second against Norwich on Wednesday night was fantastic as well.
Oof.
Screamer.
A thraker.
He thraked it. He seriously did.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Now, producer Ben's just interrupted my train of thought to say that he's watching a live stream of the Groundhog Day celebrations in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. It actually exists, people. Great, great film. Hey, Amy, this brings us on rather nicely to Arsenal, because if I'm not mistaken, your big piece today about Arsenal, it's going to have a Groundhog Day theme.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
There's a rumour going around. I haven't quite got to the bottom of it yet.
All right. Well, what's the theory here?
The theory is that, gosh, isn't it just like Groundhog Day for Arsenal? Or so somebody suggested to me.
All right. Yeah. What's like Groundhog Day?
Well, I guess the thinking is that another January transfer window goes by when Arsenal do, I'd say, almost nothing, although they did sign a 19-year-old from Borussia Dortmund who's been out for a year with some kind of injury and so forth. They're, therefore, ticks all the boxes of being young, injury-prone and technical or something, all in the same thing. But just patently failing to take the opportunity to strengthen in an area where it's very obvious. And this transfer window, lots of people were talking about fullbacks because obviously Arsenal had a fullback crisis. Mm. But in a sense, that's been something of a red herring, although you can't argue that it wouldn't have been a good thing to have perhaps brought in a fullback, given the defeats that Arsenal suffered at the beginning of the year in the Premier, three straight defeats and now just the draw at Bolton.
Yeah, 1.4. See, I would question whether it is actually so familiar, this situation. Most years you're there top four. In fact, you're always in the Champions League and doing well in Europe and all that. At the moment, looks extremely unlikely you're going to be in the Champions League at the end of the season.
Yeah, but just going back to finish my theory.
Yeah.
But it really wasn't about fullbacks, but Arsenal really should have bought some form of attacker during this January window, because the idea of going through the rest of the season, obviously if Robin van Persie had a couple of chances, both of which hit the woodwork, which might have won the game at Bolton last night, but if he has one of those days where they don't go in, then nobody appears to score.
Not Theo Walcott. What about Oxlade-Chamberlain, who's getting run in the side?
Oxlade-Chamberlain is doing very well, but he's very raw still, so he needs a bit more time.
Well, people tweeting and posting in, Jar Dilly Dally says, Amy, please tell me there is a silver lining to Arsenal season. I spend more and more time encouraging fans to keep the faith, but it's getting harder each day. Are we heading back to early 80s relative obscurity, or is this part of Wenger's plan to force the board to loosen the wage structure to allow us to compete? Is that the problem, the wage structure?
I don't think the wage structure is the problem per se. I think actually Arsenal pay a lot in wages compared to most teams. In fact, they're tied into some quite uncomfortable contracts where they're still paying out quite big wages to players. I would be surprised if they're not contributing still to the wages of the likes of Bentner and Danielson and so on, who were on loan for the whole season. And some of the players at the club who are not necessarily contributing a massive amount are still being paid, like Almunia, Squillaci, et cetera, et cetera. Shamak Park, need I go on? But every club has that problem more or less to a degree. I think that the bottom line is that the owners are very unwilling for Arsenal to be anything other than a business that makes money. That's the priority. And I think that if you ask people in America,
why did they get into football?
Because Stan Kroenke has many sports franchises, which he does in America routinely, and they're in the main considered to be extremely successful businesses. They might not always be successful sports teams, but if you ask around in America, people seem to have the opinion that he's a good owner because he produces fantastic businesses. And this is not frowned upon in the way that it is necessarily over here, because obviously the expectations are quite different, where, good business model is one thing, but a failing football model is what's obviously really concerning people that follow the club.
But are they going to be a good business model making money if they don't get into the Champions League. And, you know, it's given that money. But also, you've got this huge stadium. The prices there are, you know, extortionate. I went to a club level game recently, you know, where you get the free whatever and everything, and they pay loads in there. I had a free ticket, so I wasn't paying that much. But
Nothing. In fact.
No, nothing. Yeah. But are those people, if they don't get into the Champions League, going to be coming back paying, or is it going to be an empty Emirates?
I think it's an absolutely brilliant point. I mean, one thing I would say is when everybody talks about how it's extortionate, it is, but not all the tickets are extortionate. And in fact, I've got friends who have season tickets at Arsenal where it worked out at £35 a ticket, which right. I don't think is as extortionate as everybody says. But I think you're absolutely right to point out that people are beginning to wonder. And I think if they try and put up season tickets again, which is rumoured, at the end of this season, particularly if they fail to qualify for the Champions League, then an increasing number of people are going to sit there and think, and it's the hardcore fans who've been going for 20, 30, 40 years, who've put up with price rises over the years, as of most clubs, who are thinking, hang on a sec, I've got my mortgage, I've got two kids, you know, life is tough, everything's expensive, can I justify paying, you know, £1,000, £1,500 for the lowest price, more or less, season tickets? And the answer to that will be no, because tickets will be available on the open market. A lot of games this season have gone to general sale, and that really wasn't the case when Arsenal first went to the Emirates. And, you know, people joke about how many empty seats there are, but if those tickets are paid for, then again, as far as the business model is concerned, Arsenal don't care as regards the people at the top of the club. But if next season there's a midweek game and things aren't going well and it's against a not particularly glamorous opposition, I would really not be surprised to see a frighteningly small crowd.
I saw some level-headed Arsenal fans saying that, you know, we've been so spoiled over the years, never not been in the Champions League under Wenger. But if you don't, would it be the worst thing? But if you don't get back, you know, Liverpool haven't been back since then.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, Liverpool's crowd hasn't disappeared from Anfield. So, you know, people get very crisis and panic mode about things like this, and you can easily project negatively. And it might well be that it's not so bad and people still stick with it. But what people want to see is some ambition. And that's, I think, the problem is that people need something to cling to where they think, OK, the people running the club really want to make a go of this, and they don't just care about the balance sheets.
All right, two quick questions. One, are Arsenal going to make the Champions League? Because they currently lie seventh, a full 5 points behind the top four, behind Liverpool, behind Newcastle and Chelsea, of course.
On current form, no, because current form is rubbish. Okay, so they need to pick up very quickly.
Is Arsene Wenger still going to be there in that case next season?
Good question. I think the fact that Paris Saint-Germain appointed Ancelotti closes down an avenue.
They did try
him first, and that closes down what would have been probably quite an obvious get out. So you have to again sort of think about where he might go if he doesn't stay at Arsenal. He's not a man who breaks contracts. At the moment, he's still under contract. So something quite radical would have to happen, I think, for him to go.
It's been an absolutely fascinating discussion about the Gunners, but I've just been unable to get the image of Arsene Wenger running around Punxsutawney trying to sleep with Andy McDowell and learning ice sculpture out of my head, and only ever getting out of it once he'd signed Nicky Maynard or something. I think that'd be an excellent DVD extra to the Bill Murray original.
That's beautiful, John. Thanks for sitting quietly and dreaming that one up for us. We'll be back with more after this. Couple of posts and tweets. Ash J. Curtis says, I take it there will be a live Football Weekly on the Guardian Open weekend. Yeah, there will, actually. And we were meant to have a bit of details on this. I think it's March 24th, and you can get tickets online already, apparently, if you want them. There you go. MCGOMJ, who also goes by the name of Michael, says, I'm considering a cheeky wager on Di Natale, top Eurochamps goalscorer. Would this be a sensible investment? No, it wouldn't. There is a question about whether he'll be in the team. I think he will. He does score loads of goals in Italy. I don't see him scoring lots of goals with Italy at a European Championship because Italy don't score lots of goals. Blue Daddy, I'm a bit worried about the panel's appalling biscuiting knowledge. Yeah, this is all about that Leibniz confusion on Monday. It was difficult, in my defence, to understand what Jonathan was saying. Of course, if he'd said Leibniz as opposed to Leibniz, then I would have known. I would call it a Leibniz, wouldn't you?
Call it a Leibniz.
Yeah, or a Balson, then I know exactly what he's talking about. Right. Anyway, Solterin says the ground is called the Dripping Pan. This is Lewis's home arena. The Dripping Pan, because the site was where the monks from the local priory used to dry water from the nearby river to make salt. Thank you, Wikipedia. Hang on a second. There's no salt in river water, Solterin. There isn't. Is there? Is there salt in river water? Shouldn't be, anyway. All right, very good. Now, QPR got busy in the transfer window. Tum-tum-tum-tum-tum-tum. They bought Bobby Zamora. They bought Gibril Cisse, one goal in 18 for Lazio this season. And they got a 2-2 draw. Now, what was a terrific match there, away to Aston Villa on Wednesday night. We're not going to talk about that, though. We're going to talk about Lazio without Gibril Cisse and without Miroslav Klose, their big hero, Miro the hero, this season, who was unfit for Wednesday night's game against Milan, title-chasing Milan. And they won 2-0. I think Lazio were quite happy about not having any strikers because they had Rocky, who's 73 or whatever, and they basically just sat back and hit on the break, which is what they like doing, Eddie Reha. Manager, and they had a 2-0 win. So well done to them. Milan remain 1 point behind Juventus, who didn't play because their match at Parma was snowed off on Tuesday night. Snow all over the place in Italy. There was a midweek round. 4 games were called off. Inter's game at home to Palermo at the San Siro did go on, but only after men were all over the pitch with those kind of leaf blowers, and there was great scenes of industrial snow clearing going on there. But even so, it was one of those classic old-style white pitch. They used a yellow ball, which I thought was a bit ill-advisable. And terrific game. 4-4 it finished. Do you know, this is the first game in Europe this season in which two players from opposing teams both scored hat-tricks. That young fellow, Miccoli, who's not young, for Palermo, got 3, but Milito got all 4 of Inter's. He's on fire at the moment.
Just like Nikola Zigic.
Just like Nikola Zigic. Yeah. Just like Nikola Zigic. Anyway, that's all very exciting. Just to bring you up to date, because I'm sure you're interested, on the race for third place. So we've got Juventus top, 1 clear of Milan with a game in hand. Then Milan, clearly 2 points behind Milan. You have Udinese, who beat Lecce, then Lazio 2 points behind them. And, of course, only top three going to Champions League. So it's looking a bit tricky for, say, Inter, who are now 5 points off the top three. And Roma, a full 10 points off the top three after getting beaten 4-2 away to Cagliari. I'm not going to go on any further with this, except to say that as long as they don't reschedule it, I will be doing Roma-Inter this Saturday on ESPN. It might get rescheduled because of the snow and that. Anyway, well done to Mondonigo. Emiliano Mondonigo has come back from cancer and has just taken on over at Navarro. The fans are a bit unhappy because the guy who brought them up has been fired. And well done to Zdenek Zeman. Yeah, top of the league, Serie B in this case, with Pescara. Super. Now, mention Nikola Zigic meantime, John. That brings us on to the championship where all sorts of things are happening. His 4 goals for... go on, then.
Yeah, well, his 4 goals for Birmingham at Elland Road essentially handed Simon Grayson the sack. The Leeds manager was dismissed on the Wednesday, despite his team only being 3 points outside the playoffs and him doing a perfectly good job with the resources at his disposal. Cuddly Ken decided it was time to act after shipping 4 goals at home to Brum, who are in absolutely fantastic form, despite themselves having to... I think they've only got... Well, Birmingham won the Carling Cup, of course, last season. Only 2 of the 14 players that played in that game are still there, yet they're still flying in the league.
And so, one of them is Zigic.
And one of them is Zigic, who got the 4 goals. So it looks like Neil Warnock is the odds-on favourite.
Is he, though?
Yeah, he is with the bookies. The fans, there's a big poll on the Yorkshire Evening Post website at the moment, with, you know, suggested managers, and Sir Neil's miles ahead. I think that, you know, Leeds fans, there's a certain history with Warnock. He's not a hugely popular character there, although, I mean, he's a bit of a pantomime villain, really. But I think Leeds fans are so keen to get a bit of success, get back in the Premier League, that if Beelzebub was the man to get the best out of Robert Snodgrass, they'd be quite happy to see him in the dugout.
All right. Well, poor old Simon Grayson. Who are Leeds playing this weekend then, John?
Playing Bristol City.
Ah, they're playing Bristol City.
Who have just lost Nicky Maynard to West Ham. Mm.
West Ham.
Had a very good result on Tuesday. Lost 5-1 to Ipswich.
Yeah, that's an extraordinary result, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of...
You're still top of the table, though, aren't you?
2 points and 3 points above Cardiff.
You've got a huge match coming up this weekend.
Yeah.
Against Millwall.
12:30, Saturday. It's on Sky.
Right, early kickoff for police reasons, is it?
Yeah.
Whatever gives you that idea.
No, I think Sky just really, really wanted to show it. they're playing some great stuff under Allardyce, so, yeah, bring the punters in. Yeah, really bad result. But the more exciting is they've signed Ravel Morrison from Man United. Right. £650,000, potentially rising to £2
million. Right.
Apparently the best thing to come out of Old Trafford since Paul Scholes, Ryan Giggs.
And yet but, Manchester United let him go.
Yeah, well, apparently Ferguson was the last to who was convinced that he had to go. He's got terrific talent, loads of potential, but he's got a lot of trouble off the field. I find it amazing that he could be at Manchester United and for that not to be an incentive to knuckle down and get on with things. Whether Allardyce can do it remains to be seen.
Mm. It is a big
exciting
if, isn't
player,
it?
Though.
Okay, but a huge game then for West Ham, top of the table at the moment in the Championship, and Nottingham Forest are taking on Derby. Nottingham Forest, bottom of the Championship. John, I noticed you were doing research on Middlesbrough's form we came up. Why is that?
At this time of year, the lead teams in the Championship all seem to start wondering if they really fancy a season in the Premier League, getting their arses handed to them every week and sort of start ambling towards the finish line. So you've got Southampton, who've won twice since the end of November. Middlesbrough, who haven't won in five, despite being second on Boxing Day. West Ham, who lost to struggling Ipswich 5-1, as Jacob was saying. And, yeah, there gets to a point where people just seem to start slowing down. And it's allowed teams like Cardiff and the aforementioned Birmingham to catch right up and get themselves into the fray. It's going to be a sort of a blanket finish, I think, as it quite often is with teams sort of slowly stumbling there. And it'll be exciting to watch, certainly.
Do you think teams actually do sometimes decide not to go up?
I'm sure they don't. Although Simon Burnton of this parish, his theory that the best place to finish in the entire spectrum of English football is third in the Championship and then to lose in the playoffs, because you get a season of fun winning most matches, playing decent football, scoring a lot of goals, whatever. Then you don't have to go and do the whole Premier League.
I've been to a playoff final
season.
Defeat. It's not fun.
I've been to three.
Yeah, I think he hasn't been to one, has he?
No, they won.
They always win.
They beat Leeds, yeah.
Yeah, Watford.
So, yeah, maybe he doesn't really understand. Mm. But I see the idea behind it.
Mm. All right.
I don't think teams actually do that. I'm sure every team wants to get there.
I'm not sure. Certainly there are some countries where it's popularly believed that owners, when faced with the wage demands and all that a top-flight season will bring, put things on the back pedal a bit, sell off best players and stuff, and generally scupper chances.
Well, the teams at the top of the Championship have been doing the opposite. You know, Southampton has spent a lot of money on Billy Sharp this window.
Yeah.
West Ham with Maynard, who's a great signing from one and a bit.
Well.
Vastay from Barnsley. They've really splashed out in an attempt to get there.
All right, then. Now, I think we finish off today by saying Africa Cup of Nations quarterfinals lineup has now been decided. Let's hear from Jonathan Wilson.
James, how are you doing?
I'm very well. Jonathan, how are you?
I'm very good, thanks. Yeah.
Is it a lovely day in Equatorial Guinea?
It's a little cloudy. It's spitting onto rain. I'm just heading down the coast towards Luba.
All right,
then. And going on the Monkey Sanctuary.
The Monkey Sanctuary?
Yes.
All right, then. Excellent. Because all the football stopped until Saturday, is that right?
Yeah, we just had the end of the group stage yesterday, and then the quarterfinals start on Saturday.
All right. Cracking into the group stage, that Badou goal, woof.
Yeah, fantastic goal. I feel sorry for Guinea, actually, because they were probably the better side against Mali, lost 1-0. And then even though they beat Botswana 6-1, they were in a pretty impossible position yesterday. They needed Botswana to get something out of Mali, which of course they didn't. So I think Guinea actually... Well, the teams who've gone home, they were the best of those eight sides. So, sympathy for Guinea. But, yeah, Ghana looked very powerful, looked very good. And Mali have done well as well.
All right, excellent. And which one of the quarterfinals are you going to? You've got Zambia, Sudan, Ivory Coast, Equatorial Guinea, Gabon, Mali, and Ghana, Tunisia.
I'll be at Ivory Coast, Equatorial Guinea on Saturday in Malabo. Then I've got a flight at 3:30 in the morning to Libreville. And I'll be at Gabon v Mali.
Mm.
So it'll be my first time in Gabon, so I'm just looking forward to that and sampling that atmosphere in Libreville.
Excellent. That does sound remarkable. Anything else to report, Jonathan, from the end of the group stages or Monkey Sanctuary journey too? Anything?
Well, this journey down the coast is lovely. It's sort of proper jungle, if you know what I mean. It looks like the jungle you see in a kid's book with banana trees and papaya trees. It's very, very attractive and... yeah, they're a very nice drive for a day off.
Excellent. And I hope you've been keeping up with the TV. I mean, we've had Dogtanyan and people dancing in car parks so far. Any news to report from Equatorial Guinea Television?
Yeah, I learned a very valuable lesson earlier this week, which is don't go for breakfast between about 10 to 9 and quarter past 9, because that's when the Nigerian telenovela's on and the waiters all just sit in the corner and watch it, and you just can't get a coffee in that time. Then, Sunderland winning 3-0 last night, of course, was a big highlight. And that was followed very closely in the press room by me, at least.
Well, terrific. Enjoy your monkey sanctuary, Jonathan. And,
thank you very much.
And the two quarterfinals as well. And then hopefully we can catch up with you on Monday.
Absolutely. I'll speak to you then.
Nice one. Thanks, Jonathan. Right. Well, that brings us almost to the end of today's Football Weekly Extra. But, John Ashton, you mentioned your strange dream when we were sitting down today in the pod, but we haven't got round to it yet. Yeah. So what happened?
Well, it's not entirely non-football related, and it's only more. It's one
it
of those,
might not be.
Well, yes. Interesting you should say that. Mm. Basically, I'm in a room and I shoot Roy Hattersley, the former deputy leader of the Labour Party.
With what?
With a gun that's loaded with mozzarella. And then he chased me down the stairs.
Roy Hattersley is the Sheffield Wednesday chairman,
exactly.
And you're a Sheffield United fan.
The big derby is next week.
Did you genuinely dream you were in a room with Roy Hattersley and you shot him with a gun loaded with mozzarella?
Yeah,
it
was bizarre.
Would it fire if it had mozzarella in it?
Well, this one did, and it was
like a big splurge gun.
No, yeah, they were like kind of small, like mini.
Oh, they were like little bocconcini.
Was this the real looking Roy Hattersley or the spitting image looking Roy Hattersley?
I think
the spitting image one with mozzarella shooting would be a great image.
No, I'm pretty sure it was the real one.
And what happened when you shot him with this soft?
He reeled, you know, like he was in. Right. And I shot him several times in the face.
But obviously,
obviously, there was no blood or anything. It was just like sort of being. It's like being
a
shot
kind
with
of a dairy thing.
Yeah. And then he chased me down the stairs.
Right. So you provoked.
Quite what Freud would make of me shooting.
Well, I want to know what listeners make of you shooting Roy Hattersley with a cheese gun. Had you eaten cheese before you went to bed, crucially?
No, I hadn't, no.
Perhaps that was the issue. Maybe your subconscious wanted cheese, and you were also identifying him, you know, he was representing Sheffield Wednesday. Or maybe there's something else, you know, to do with your sexual inadequacies or something that's behind this dream.
It could be penis envy or mother love or any of those things.
Yeah, in what condition did you wake up from this dream?
Yeah. I'm not going to yeah, say.
All right. Well, there is the dream. If you have a psychoanalytical background, do get in touch via the message boards, because it might be that John urgently needs your help.
Send them any white coats.
Yeah. Well, there you go. And if you are Roy Hattersley as well, I'm sure it's not personal, is it, John?
No, absolutely. There's no in my true waking state, yes. I have no desire to shoot Roy Hattersley with my mozzarella gun.
Right, or anybody, John, or anybody.
Or anybody,
right,
yes, with any gun.
Okay, good. Excellent. Well, that's it for today's Football Weekly Extra. Many thanks for joining us, Amy Lawrence, John Ashton and Jacob Steinberg. Producer Ben at the controls once more. There will be a paper roundup, if you like, on Friday, and then we'll be back on Monday with our roundup of all of the weekend's fun and games. Bye for now. Arrivederci.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.